Good afternoon and welcome to House Finance. Today we will be taking public testimony on House Bill 66, Appropriation Mental Health Budget, and also House Bill 67, Appropriation Operating Budget, Loans, Funds, and CBR. Today from 1:30 to 3:30 we are going to take public testimony from the citizens of Juneau. Then we'll take an hour break, I believe, 3:30 to 4:30, and then we'll come back and listen to telephonic constituents from the Fairbanks area. With that, the time is 1:38. And with us today, we have Representative Moses, Representative Holm, Representative Kelly, Representative Foster, Representative Jewell, Representative Wyrock, Representative Hawker, Co-Chair Meyer, and Co-Chair Chenault. So with that, we will attempt to keep testimony to 2 minutes. I've got the clock, and I'll try to be generous if we have the time available, and I'll try to work with people as they get up to testify. Also, we have Representative Stoltz that's joining us. So with that, if there are no questions, I would ask the first testifier, and that would be Carol Edwards, to please come forward and give us your testimony. Also, if you have written testimony you would like to be have entered into the record, if you will see one of the staff here, they will gladly make a copy and enter it into the record. So with that, Ms. Edwards.
Thank you. Afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I want to thank you for hearing my testimony today. My name is Carol Edwards. I've been an oncology nurse for over 20 years. My testimony today is on behalf of the Alaska Nurses Association and myself. Before speaking to you about specific shortcoming in the budget bill before you, let me thank all of the members of the committee and Health and Social Services Subcommittee, chaired by Representative Hawker, for your many hours of hard work. This budget includes funding for tobacco cessation programs, maintenance of public health nurses, additional child protection services, and other health care services. We realize that these programs bear a cost to the state of Alaska, and we support efforts by the legislature to address the long-term fiscal solution in order to keep and maintain these programs. But we are also concerned about the need to fund prevention and screening programs for breast and cervical cancer. Others may speak to you about statistics. As a nurse, I want to talk to you about people. I will speak primarily of breast cancer, since that has the greatest impact on the women of Alaska. For many years, I have firmly believed that prevention and early detection is cost-effective. The cost to families that is not financial is overwhelming when a woman has breast cancer. Think of the emotional cost. The woman and her family must face the possibility of her death. If premenopausal, she will most likely go through menopause and the emotional upheaval that that causes at this stressful time. A double whammy, you might say. Many marriages cannot handle this stress and break up. Children act out in school and have difficulties with their studies. I've heard teenagers and college students say, "Why should I study and graduate? It's probably genetic, and I'll just die anyway, so I'll party now." The women experience a fatigue like no other. Oftentimes, performing housework or going to a job is more than they can handle. Work is missed and money is short. Or, more likely, they go to work anyway, and they're really exhausted. And then they have to deal with treatment. Homes are disruptive, life is in turmoil. And I'm not even touching on the self-image changes that women experience during this time. And this is huge. As for money, if that's all you want to think about, a mammogram costs approximately $200, including the cost of the mammogram and the reading by the radiologist. Only one treatment of chemotherapy varies in cost, but can be as much as $8,700 for one treatment only. This does not include the physician. This does not include the lab work. This is only one treatment. A mastectomy, for hospital charges only, no surgeon fees, can be as much as about $10,000. A breast biopsy, again, hospital charges only, is between $4,000 and $5,500. Add to that the cost of possibly 6 weeks of radiation treatment. Now, in Alaska, most women have to travel out of their hometown to do this. Only Juneau and Fairbanks have the capabilities of providing radiation treatment. So you have the additional cost of living somewhere else for 6 weeks and getting there. This is also extremely disruptive to the family. Then there's the follow-up care, the possibility of relapse. Oftentimes, because the lymph nodes are sampled, there is a high risk of infection to that arm, and physical therapy is needed, and this continues to come back for many people over the years. It is not at all unusual for the treatment of breast cancer to far exceed $100,000 per person. Look at the cost of the mammogram, $200 to find it early. Both in terms of dollars and also the cost and stress to the family, cancers that are caught early cost less, both emotionally and dollar-wise. Cancer forever changes a family, not just an individual. I tell you this not as a nurse who has cared for patients with cancer for over 20 years, but as a wife who has loved and cared for a spouse with cancer. We are blessed due to early screening and detection. My husband's cancer cost us and the state of Alaska very little in dollars, and although life-changing, it cost us much less in emotional trauma than it would have if he had required more extensive treatment. Please fund this program for the women, for the men, and the children who love them of Alaska. Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you, Carol. Next, we have Rick. I'm not going to attempt to pronounce your last name, sir.
I think I'll be able to accommodate you. I'm Rick Iannolino. I coordinate the Juneau FASD Diagnostic Clinic. Gentlemen, I'm honored to speak in front of you. There's one disorder in Alaska that's 100% preventable, and that is FASD, fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and fetal alcohol syndrome. 100% preventable. The cost for supporting one person, and one of your districts, as you know, have a lot of people that have this particular disorder because their mothers drank and their fathers didn't support those mothers during pregnancy. The cost of supporting one individual with FASD for their life is between $1.5 and $3 million. That's the estimates. Now, I believe it's $1.2 million. That's in the budget that we're discussing right now. One of those people, if you can prevent one of those people, you've covered your budget. That's real prevention. Alaska has the highest rate of FASD in the country. Yukon Territory, our neighbor, has the highest in Canada of any province or territory. We're very similar that way. I left the diagnostic clinic, which is actually in session right now, to come here. I encourage you to think, number one, as a finance committee, that this is a cost-effective kind of prevention program that we need to fund. In fact, we can't afford not to fund it. We think, anecdotally, and this is both nationally in the United States and Canada, they estimate between around 40% and above, that's a conservative estimate, of the people currently housed in the correction system are affected by FASD. That's very, very costly. Thank you. I think my 2 minutes is up according to that buzz, but thank you very much.
Well, thank you, sir, for your testimony. Next, we have Karen Catcher.
Hello. My name is Karen Cashin, and I'm a step-parent of an adult child with FAS. From a parent's perspective, I don't feel that we can afford not to fund prevention for FASD. The cost to our family raising a child with FAS has been financially crippling. We raised three sons in addition to my stepson. We received no assistance from his mom. His doctor appointments were too numerous to count. We were lucky enough to have insurance, but as my stepson grew, his problems also grew. He developed several secondary disabilities, so our trips to the doctors came more often. I can't impress upon you enough the huge financial toll this takes on a family's finances. Along the way, I developed several chronic health conditions. In my conversations with other parents, I find that there are also other parents raising FAS who have developed secondary chronic health conditions. I've heard from a doctor and a counselor, both whom have helped our son, that raising a child with FAS is like raising four children. The other compared it to living four lifetimes, and both were correct. Our finances, when I became ill, were cut in half. I had run a local daycare program, and I believe my health problems were brought on because of the daily stresses of raising a child with FASD. The doctor appointments have not ended just because our son is no longer in our home. We now have marriage counseling, child counseling, and family counseling to deal with the fallout that this causes. And so the financial struggle continues. Our son is now an adult. He doesn't qualify for any services because he has an IQ of 115. He is now drug addicted, homeless, unemployed, and uninsured. This is not an unusual set of circumstances for an adult with FASD, even when raised in the most supportive of homes. He has been in and out of court, most times unaware of exactly why he's there. He's been in jail twice and will no doubt be there again. Not because he didn't have a loving, nurturing family, but because he has FASD. The cost to the state will be enormous. The cost to our family, unimaginable. Prevention is key to putting an end to this heartbreaking, 100% preventable disability. Thank you.
Dixon Street, Juneau, Alaska, and I'm here to talk again about a topic that I touched upon at an earlier Finance Committee meeting, which is funding for small public charter schools. I and four other parents with students in the local charter school are here to ask you to amend the budget by adding a section providing $400,000 in funding for small public charter schools. This committee added $200,000 to last year, to the FY05 budget for this purpose, and although it was reduced in the conference committee, that began to address the inequities in the funding of small charter schools that are in the school foundation formula statutes. I had a copy of those statutes distributed to you at your desks. Charter schools with fewer than 150 students receive much less state money per student than any other public school. State law does not treat these schools as separate for funding purposes. Instead, they are lumped in with the largest school in their district, and that's generally a high school with more than 750 students, which gets you the lowest rate there on the back of the sheet that was handed to you. That means that our students, our districts receive for our students 84% of the basic funding for each of our students. And because the formula gives more money for the first 750 kids into the high school than the later ones, actually we receive about 10 to 15% less per student than even the big high schools once the base and the multiplier figure for 750 kids schools are taken together. Without the charter school grant in the state budget, School districts are penalized for authorizing charter schools because they would be receiving more money if the students were in the regular elementary schools that they'd generally be attending, which would have anywhere from 300 to 650 kids in them. And I don't think that's an intentional penalization, but it occurs. To sum up, the inequities in the foundation formula statute, which is not an easy thing to open up and address, mean that it's not very feasible to have charter schools in communities outside Anchorage, Mat-Su, and Fairbanks. And I believe that charter schools offer important educational options to families, and that choices increase a school district's ability to meet the needs of varied students, and choices empower parents and encourage their involvement. So I'd ask you to, as you did last year, address this issue in the operating budget through the addition of a section providing grants until the time when the foundation formula can be open for a more permanent solution. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Barbara Thurston.
Hi, thanks. Hi, I'm Barbara Thurston. Thanks for allowing me to testify. As Captain mentioned, I'm a parent. I have two children in the Juneau School District, one of whom is in the local Juneau Community Charter School. In addition to that, I'm currently working with the superintendent's office as a volunteer on a task force dealing with access and equity among the different choices within the Juneau School District. One of the barriers that we have found to making Juneau School District's program accessible to all children is the inequity in the funding. The current charter school receives substantially less money per child than the regular elementary schools do. Because of that, parents of the charter school spend a great deal of time fundraising. Parents need to perform some of the work, like recess duty, janitorial work, that a regular school would hire paid staff to. The charter school simply does not have the money to pay staff to do that. In addition, the Juneau School Board has pending an application for a second charter school in Juneau, and I don't know which way they're going to decide on that, whether they will approve it or disapprove it. But right now, one of the big sticking issues is money. A lot of those kids are currently in a traditional elementary classroom. They would end up pulled out in a charter school, which would cost the district money, and the school district isn't sure they can afford to do that. They aren't sure they can afford to give those choices to parents. Ideally, the funding formula would be changed so that school districts did not have a disincentive for offering choices to their families. My understanding is that that's not practical at this particular moment. I'd like to request that you add an amendment to the budget to add back in the small charter school grant that was in last year's budget. That doesn't completely solve the equity issue. It certainly helps a lot and gives choices to more families and more parents for their children. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Lucy Hudson. I didn't mean to cut you off, so.
Mr. Chairman, members of the House Finance Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Lucy Hudson. I am a member of the Governor's Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. As a public member of this board, I am here today to ask for your support of the Governor's FY 06 and 05 Supplemental Budget Resolution request for two of the most important health issues facing our state today. And the first one is the fetal alcohol syndrome. Our board supports the governor's request for $1.1 million in the 06 budget. Fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, FASD, is a permanent birth defect syndrome caused by maternal consumption of alcohol during pregnancy. FASD is the leading known and the only 100% preventable cause of mental retardation. Drinking alcohol during pregnancy destroys growing and developing cells in the fetus, causing permanent damage in the brain. This $1.1 million will be used to prevent, through education, alcohol-related birth defects, increase and improve diagnostic services and the delivery of services to those individuals already affected by fetal alcohol syndrome. This funding will also be used to evaluate the outcomes of these statewide efforts, and I know that the evaluation of how effective these programs are is a big concern to a lot of people. We believe strongly that prevention through education can reduce FASD and the costly services to treat this population after the fact. I can stop now if you'd like me to, although I was going
like
to put in... I was
going
like
to finish up, please go ahead.
I was going to put in a pitch for the substance abuse and prevention package, too. We also support the governor's request for $1.5 million in the 06 budget and $4.5 million in the supplemental budget to battle this major cost and health problem in our state. This substance abuse costs the state of Alaska more than $600 million annually in criminal justice, health care, treatment, family violence, lost productivity, accidents, and other social service assistance. And I would just like to say that really prevention is a key to the long-term health of Alaskans. And the more we can do to educate and prevent substance abuse and fetal alcohol syndrome from happening, the better off we'll be. So thank you very much for the opportunity to testify before you today.
Thank you. Next we will have Ginny Monk.
Thanks. My name is Jeannie Monk, and I'm here to also with the small charter schools. I have a second grader who attends Juneau Community Charter School just down the street. The Juneau Community Charter School has 65 students in grades K through 6. And as people have mentioned, we're struggling to survive financially because of the way the charter school funding formula works. And I really strongly believe in school choice and feel that charter schools offer parents an opportunity to make the best choices for their children educationally. And just a little personal, our family, the charter school works really well for us, and it's really important. My son was born with a serious congenital heart defect and has some health problems. And for him, being in a small school environment is the right place. I feel secure that his health and safety needs are met and that people know his medical condition. And it's really important to me that we do have these options available to families, that every child doesn't fit the same mold for what they need in schools. And because the funding formula is written, it really is only possible for schools over 150 to survive. And that just doesn't seem fair to parents who might need other choices. So I would really urge you to consider helping equalize the funding for small charter schools, if not through reopening the funding formula, but the small charter school grant program last year that was included in the operating budget made a really big difference, and we really appreciated it. We received $20,000, which is a small amount, but made a big difference in our ability to keep the charter school doors open for another year. It's still not enough to correct the inequity, but it did help. We still are lacking money for important things like bus transportation, recess and classroom aides, janitorial services, but we've survived another year and would ask that you consider again adding in a small charter school grant to help small charter schools survive until the inequities in the funding formula can be corrected. Thank you.
And thank you. Next. Next, we have Polly Cocker-Reel.
Hi, I'm Holly Cockrell, and I've been a social worker for almost 15 years, and I appreciate the opportunity to come here and talk about fetal alcohol spectrum disorders and addictions itself. In the past almost 15 years, I've worked with a great number of children and adults who have been impacted by fetal alcohol spectrum disorders and by addiction itself. And unfortunately, I spend a lot of time, and others spend a lot of time, being reactive, formulating plans in a reactive manner because the prevention didn't occur or it wasn't there. And I can tell you that for every dollar that's cut today on prevention, you can expect to spend that in the future at least tenfold on to react to the devastation that, that will occur if the prevention's not there. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Merle Ritter.
Hello, and thank you for allowing me to come. I'm a consumer of SAIL, that wonderful organization that supports us. I started losing my eyesight about 8 years ago, and with SAIL, they've come and taught me how to live independently so that I can stay in my own apartment. And they arranged the kitchen, you know, the refrigerator, everything, so that you're safe and all right. And then they've also given me many little things, you know, to help me along, plus an Aladdin CCTV, which helps me read my mail. It's a great big thing that that you put the mail in, and then it makes it bigger, and you can actually see it. And then if I decide to take up the computer, and they bought me a program called Zoom Text, which reads the computer to me, so I'm able to use it and send messages to my grandchildren and get them back. And it's really, and then they gave me an instructor too to show me how to use the program. They have done a wonderful job, and I strongly hope you support them. Thank you.
Thank you, Merle, for your testimony. Next, we have Cheryl Hull.
You have to rearrange the furniture for this one.
That's not the first time we've done it.
I'll bet not.
Okay. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, everybody. I am here to ask you to consider reinstating the $150,000 which was deleted from the funds for independent living centers. In Alaska, more than 2,400 people are served by independent living centers throughout the state. These independent living centers can help people purchase wheelchairs, shower benches, grab bars, magnifiers, computers, whatever people need in order to continue to live in their homes independently and to do things on their own without having to have the help of somebody reading their mail for them or whatever. About 20 years ago, I started losing my sight, and it finally culminated when I lost all of my sight while I moved here to Juneau in 1986. The problem was really further complicated by diabetes, and so I have other ailments along with this. But SAIL has been most helpful to me in that they purchased for me a chair so that I could do my hemodialysis here in Juneau. Before we had the center, my husband and I did the hemodialysis in our own home in a bedroom that we converted for this purpose. They purchased also pull-down shelves for my kitchen cabinets so that I could continue to work in my kitchen even from a wheelchair. They've been most helpful with all of these things. These are little purchases, about $1,500 a piece, but you add them up over a period of, you know, over a length of time here. These are quite spendy, and they're needed by people like me who have significant disabilities, whose disabilities are ongoing and are worsening every day. I can no longer use my hands. I can no longer do some of the things that I used to do. But SAIL and the independent living centers throughout Alaska have helped to keep me in my home. I have no immediate plans for going to a rest home, believe me. I'll be staying at my house, and any one of you is welcome to come see what these independent living centers can do for each of us. I thank you for your time. I really do hope that you will consider putting that money back into the independent living centers, and that you will increase the budget for these centers. They do amazing work throughout Alaska. I'm not the only person who has benefited from this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hall. Next, we have Kathy Johnson.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Kathy Johnson. I'm a resident of Juneau, and I serve on the board of directors for the Aware Shelter. And I'm a survivor of domestic violence and sexual assault. Growing up, there weren't words like domestic violence. It was more often referred to as the man of the house, and there were certain rights that one had. And being female, I took note that my gender did not entail me to certain rights. When I left home, I fell prey to my childhood, and I didn't realize I could say no. Or worse yet, when I did say no, I wasn't heard, and a little part of me died. It took me a while to figure out how a woman can call a rape when a man has certain rights. My last time being a victim was in 1999, and after that incident, I found my voice. I heard for the first time that it wasn't my fault. I never realized that I did have rights and that I could speak out. And the fact that I wasn't heard wasn't my fault. I still deal with the fallout from a life without a voice, but I'm here before you now using my voice. You have the opportunity to grant an additional $300,000 for children and victims of sexual assault. While serving on the board for the Aware Shelter, the amount of money received to help victims has remained constant for several years, although the cost of living has risen. We appreciate the funding that we do receive. However, without additional funds to keep up with the cost of living, we have cut services down to the essentials. Any help to victims is essential. At Aware, there is a waiting list of children to see counselors, children that need the opportunity to hear that it's not their fault, to be validated. I recall watching my husband's daughter at her 16th birthday party. There were about 10 girls sitting around the table. My eyes took in the party and a little voice spoke up. Which one will be the victim of violence? It was chilling to me to know the statistics and that one of these brilliant, vivacious young ladies stands a good chance of being victimized. The comfort I do have is that we are able to rise to the occasion, help them recover, whisper to them it's not your fault, and give them the services they need to rebuild into strong, confident women with a voice. Thank you for your time today. I respectfully request the additional funding of $300,000 for children and victims of sexual assault.
Well, thank you, Ms. Johnson. Next, we have Mark Wheeler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Mark Wheeler. I'm speaking on behalf of myself today. I'm a resident here in Juneau. First, I'd like to thank you all in the House for your leadership on education funding and taking that bold step forward recently. But I'm here today to talk about the items in the operating budget regarding prevention and FAS. I personally think the governor has shown tremendous leadership in adding additional monies for substance abuse prevention and FAS prevention. These are huge problems in Alaska, and personally, my life has been touched by the harmful effects of alcohol. I think probably all of you know somebody, a friend or a coworker or a family member who's been affected by alcohol. But we can prevent the harmful effects. And just one thing I know about is mentoring. And just as a comparison, you know, our mothers always told us an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. If you invest in prevention today, you'll have many effects on down the road. We know that a child, to find a mentor for a child and to have that child in a mentoring relationship for a year or longer costs about $1,000 a year. We also know that that child will be half as likely to start using drugs and a quarter less likely to start drinking than his peer. But that child without prevention gets involved in drugs and alcohol, you can think of the long-term effects, maybe the worst case of being incarcerated. And we know that costs $50,000 to $100,000 a year. So I would encourage you to follow the governor's lead and put these monies, and even if it's just 1 year, even if one child is prevented from the harmful effects of drugs and alcohol, you will have had an effect. Even if you can't do it next year, please do it this year. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Walter Majors.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Walter Majors, and I'm the Executive Director of Juno Youth Services, and we provide mental health and substance abuse services to children and youth in Juno, and we serve about 700 youth per year, and many of them have both substance abuse and mental health problems. I'm sure that many of you have heard about the Governor's Bring the Kids Home initiative, the fact that we have any given time about 500 kids from Alaska that can't get the services they need here, so they have to be down south in the lower 48 receiving services in very expensive places called residential psychiatric treatment centers. And in order to bring those kids home, we really need to have adequate mental health and substance abuse services here in the state of Alaska. And so my first request for you would be to please, as in the governor's office, to fully fund the mental health grants as well as Medicaid. A lot of times people think about Medicaid just for primary care, but actually it's a way that many kids access mental health services and chemical dependency services as well. And about 70% of the clients that we serve are on Medicaid. About 30% are not. They are the working poor. And those are the ones that we really need to depend upon the grants in order to be able to serve them and their families. I'd also like to speak to the issue that many people before me have spoken and to urge you to support the governor's budget, both in the supplemental budget and in the operating budget for substance abuse prevention and FAS funding. We are part of the FAS effort here in Juneau with the diagnostic team, and it's an incredible collaborative effort, and it's really critical given how big of an issue this is in the state of Alaska and how we compare nationally to be able to continue this work and to be able to provide that funding. And as far as prevention is concerned, it's really important that we start to reach kids at a younger age before they've made the choices to use substance abuse. And so I really urge you to fund the prevention funding that the governor is asking for so that we can start to reach kids at a younger age. And I thank you very much.
Thank you for your question. Next we have Daryl from the community. General Community Guard?
He had to leave to go back to work.
Okay.
On the field trip, I'm not sure.
Next, we will have Brian Johnson. Mr. Johnson?
Well, I want to first thank you for your time. My name is Brian Johnson. I'm the Director of Business Assistance with the Juneau Economic Development Council. And I would like to speak to you today about economic development. And in regards to economic development, I have heard it said that the state of Alaska does not do enough for the little guy. And in particular, I'm referring to microenterprises. Now, a microenterprise is defined by the federal government as a business that employs five or fewer people. And the Department of Labor statistics show that these micro-enterprises, or micro-businesses, if you will, account for 18% of all employment in our state. So they are a significant sector of the economy, and this is even more true in the rural areas. But these entrepreneurs need help. Oftentimes, they know how to catch fish, or they know how to make doors or windows or whatever it is that their business does, but they need help with marketing their products. They need help with writing a business plan in order to obtain financing. They may need help with personnel issues or regulatory issues. There's a lot of business technical assistance needs that they have. And there are groups throughout the state that are providing these services. The Juneau Economic Development Council is, of course, one of them. We help entrepreneurs throughout Southeast Alaska, and our goal is to empower them to achieve success. And while there is some collaboration among these groups, it's mostly a bunch of independent nonprofit groups that are operating without the benefits that would be obtained by a more coordinated and collaborative effort. In other words, there is no statewide strategy for empowering entrepreneurs to achieve success. And in a nutshell, that's what the JEDC would like to propose, is a more coordinated and collaborative strategy so that our services could be made more efficient and more effective. And so if there is a budget amendment in front of you, or if one should be introduced soon regarding entrepreneurial development in Alaska, I would urge you to help show some support for the little guy by supporting this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Pam Johansson.
I'm Pam Johansson. I'm a parent at the Juneau Community Charter School. I just learned I was to testify recently, so I don't have much of a prepared statement except to tell you that I believe that charter schools offer a good choice, and I believe that as small schools, they don't provide a large impact on the community, but it's hard for them to stay small. At a funding at 84 cents for every dollar that per this sheet I have here, it's hard to make ends meet. And so the alternative is to become large and become a burden on the other schools in the district. In addition, smaller communities such as Nome and Kodiak, that would cause a very large burden on those communities if that school were to grow larger above 150. There are a lot of factors that go into the making of a budget of a school. We work very hard. If any figure was to go helter-skelter, our school would not survive. I strongly support you, or encourage you, to look at the grant again for funding for charter schools, as you did last year, until we can look at a new funding model. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johansson. Next we have Ruth Simpson.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Ruth Simpson. I am an employee at the National Council of Alcoholism and Drug Dependents. I'm also a mom of two adolescent Alaskans. As a professional, I can tell you that over the last 20 years working in this field, I've watched the pendulum of services arc in both extremes and have experienced a great deal of frustration on the behalf of my clients during the lean years. The last 10 years have been particularly lean in regards to our youth. We have lost so many valuable and functional support services due to budget cuts. And we as agencies just keep adjusting, but our young people can only adjust so much. They need more help. I work as a smoking cessation specialist, but every week kids disclose to me the issues they have around alcohol and marijuana. They disclose because they don't have enough other adults to talk to in their life, and are attempting to sort out these problems the best way they can. What they report is alarming. More than ever, these students are reporting frightening frequencies of alcohol use and abuse across all socioeconomic classes. Last week, an eighth grader stated, "Ruth, there isn't anybody who doesn't drink. Even those awesome Christian kids that everyone thinks are so perfect, they go out." 2 years ago, our youth risk survey reported about half of all eighth graders drank. I would venture to say that that number is higher today. We have trimmed prevention too much for too long, putting this generation of kids in a difficult position. We have to counterattack this faulty belief system that they have, that all of them have to drink, that there isn't another choice. We will do this through school-based prevention programs, beefing those up again, student assistance programs, media campaigns that promote abstinence as an acceptable alternative, which I don't believe that they think it is at this point. We have a lot of work to do, and we're prepared to do it, and we have the passion to do it if given the necessary funding. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you, Ms. Sims. Next, we have Elizabeth Rutter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and the committee members. My name is Elizabeth Rutter. I'm a VISTA volunteer and a social worker at National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence. I'm here today to represent those people who unfortunately cannot represent themselves, often due to the fact that they are behind doors of a prison cell. I work at Johnson Youth Center, which is the detention and treatment center for the youth of the Juneau and Southeast Alaska area. And most of those kids that are in Johnson Youth Center are there because of actions they did when they were under the influence of alcohol and drugs. One of the boys I work with there, who I tried to get here today, but unfortunately is not allowed to leave, is in Johnson Youth Center because he was high on drugs and stabbed his best friend. He woke up the next morning in a prison cell knowing absolutely nothing about what he had done or why he was there, and realized later on that it was because he had blacked out during the use of alcohol and drugs. He also let me know that he comes from Sitka, and in his class in Sitka, he has 27 classmates, and he told me that of the 27 classmates, 24 of them currently use or abuse drugs or alcohol. There are few prevention services offered in Sitka, Juneau, or many other towns in Alaska, which allows many youth to fall through his cracks, many youth who otherwise could be very professional and good additions to society in Alaska. But fortunately, there's hope. I also work with the CHOICE program, which is choosing healthy options in cooperative education at the high school, which takes high-risk youth and puts them into a separate classroom facility where they get more one-on-one attention. In this program, we do a lot of work with them on drug and alcohol prevention. We had a retreat last month with them for 2 days, and many of the kids went into the retreat saying, drinking's not a big deal, drugs aren't a big deal, most of our parents, most of our families do drugs and use alcohol, why shouldn't we? By the end of these 2 days, after a lot of education, teaching them about the effects of drugs and alcohol, and how it's seen and used in Alaska, many of these children had changed their minds. Many of them realized the negative effects that drugs and alcohol had on their family and decided that they didn't want to fall through those cracks. They wanted to make healthy decisions for themselves, for their families, and for future generations, and are committing to the idea of abstaining from alcohol and drug use. So there's hope, but there's no hope without the money. And fortunately, it's necessary to keep the funding there for prevention of alcohol and drug abuse, because it can really increase and improve the youth and their opportunities for the future of Alaska. Thank you very much.
And thank you. Next we have, I'll try, Shava Lee.
Close. But you're the only one who's ever mispronounced it.
I thought I was going to have a great day today.
My name is Hava Lee, and thank you for this opportunity to be here today. And I'm here representing my mother and myself, and my mother who has Alzheimer's, and myself who's getting older as the minutes progress, and as well as all of us. Every one of us who's here today, in fact, everyone in the world, regardless of our political affiliation, our religious preference, our marital status, education level, income, or even how much plastic surgery we have, we'll all age and then we'll die. And I would like to encourage you to reinstate funding for 6 CNA positions at the Juno Pioneer Home, and these positions, I believe, will directly result in a safer environment for Pioneer Home residents, because we cannot forget the elderly. We cannot shove their concerns for health care, protection, or safety into a back corner to be discussed at some later date. To do so is not only terribly wrong, it is condemning us to live with the terrible results of our own inaction. Our population is living longer, but for what? What standard do we place on the quality of an elderly person's life? What standard will we use if that person is our mother or our father, or in fact ourselves? In 2005, Alaska can look with pride to the Juno Pioneer Homes. They are proof that our last years can be quality years. The staff and the programs and assistance they provide are amazing. However, the buildings will soon reach the point, if they have not already, where they can no longer continue to defer maintenance. As more Alaskans stay in the state and live longer, the population of the Pioneers' homes will continue to increase. It makes common sense that as the individuals needing assistance grows, the number of staff and the money allocated should increase as well. While we consider spending and the services that money will provide, we should set goals and standards that we can be proud of, and ones that reflect a caring attitude for human beings. Our goal should not be to lower our standards to meet or match the abysmal situations found in other states where our elderly live. Other states should strive to catch up to us. We should be a leading light, not a follower of substandard care. For example, regarding the issue of fall rates, or the number of times a resident, in this case of a Pioneer Home, falls, we should continually be striving to reduce the number of falls in order to lessen the financial burden on the state for caring for the broken bones, compromised immune and respiratory system that falls cost, because they cost more money than providing extra staffing to reduce the falls in the first place. To argue that staffing can be reduced because Alaska fall rates is not as high as other states is not only economic folly, it is a course of action without compassion and even the most basic respect for human life and dignity, and should fall far below any standard we would accept. The actions are the inactions we all take today, and not just you as a legislative body, but each and every one of us, will determine the future for our loved ones and for each of us sitting here today. We should all ask ourselves, who will be there to care for us, and what example are we leading them to follow? Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for your testimony, and now you have me totally confused. Yes. I was going to say Chen for our next person here, C-H-E-N. Now you have me wrong to think it might be Ian. With that, our next speaker is, I'm going to say Chen. And it's Winslow. Something like that.
That would be me.
I'm gonna butcher it.
That's Sherry Winslow.
Well, that's a C-H-E here.
And I'm sorry you're having a bad day.
That's all right. At least somebody cares. Please, go ahead.
And I'm here today. Well, my name is Sherry Winslow, and I'm here with Meeting the Challenge campaign. I'm an alcoholic addict in recovery, almost for 10 years now, and I've lived here in Juneau for 18 years. I have a son who's in ninth grade at the high school, and I want to tell you what I see and hear here in Juneau, and that is that our kids at very young ages are using drugs and alcohol and are becoming addicted. A 2003 survey of middle schoolers in Juneau reports that 20% of our 14-year-olds used marijuana, and that 5.4% of those tried it for the first time before the age of 11. the percentage of 14-year-olds who reported that they had a drink of alcohol other than just a few sips is 43%. That's almost half of our 14-year-olds. And of those, 16.4% had their first drink before the age of 11. And that's not counting just sips. This is frightening to me and alarming. And I hope it is to you also. And I know that you guys have kids as well. This is a life-threatening problem. The Center on Alcohol Marketing and Youth, CAMI, in Washington, D.C., reports that the nation made little, if any, progress in 2004 in reducing the number one drug problem among youth, which is underage drinking. They have estimated 4,554 people under the age of 21 die each year due to excessive alcohol use. We desperately need to fund substance abuse prevention and treatment programs. I don't want my son to die. He's had my lectures, and I've advocated and lectured him as much as a parent can and should. But children need to hear it right in their schools. They need to have those programs come into the school and talk to all of them at their level with professionals. It's a crazy bad thing. And like Ruthie said earlier, you know, kids are so, it's more than just peer pressure. It's that everybody drinks. My son said 80% of the kids drink and have marijuana in their pockets. So I really would appreciate it if you folks could look over the prevention and health promotion. You spend some money on this. It is life-threatening. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Sherry. Next, we'll have Barbara Belknap.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Barbara Belknap. I live at 4481 Abbey Way in Juneau. I am the mother, sister, great-niece, and friend of women who were abused at the hands of their ex-husbands. To honor these women, I serve on the board of directors of the Juneau Aware Shelter. Alaska has the shameful distinction of having the highest per capita rate of sexual assault and homicides of women in the United States. And I appreciate the governor's support for funding domestic violence and sexual assault programs. Last Sunday's Anchorage Daily News had a column, I don't know how many of you read this, by Beth Bragg titled, State Pockmarked by Domestic Killing Risks Turning Numb. She writes that Alaskan men kill women at the highest rate in the country. She goes on to quote Judy Sullivan Pickett's of the Anchorage Women's Shelter saying, we're losing women at an alarming rate, and it's not just the family's loss, it's the community's loss. These are real women. Ironically, the paragraph two above it is of a priest abusing women up in Western Alaska, or young girls, actually. She is describing the women who are brutally murdered. Thousands of other women and girls are beaten, raped, and emotionally abused in our villages, towns, and cities. I urge you to appropriate an additional $500,000 to provide safe havens and the best possible programs for these women and their children. My passion is prevention. More funding could allow the shelters to expand their outreach and education programs. These programs make sure that everyone in a village, town, or city knows who to call and where to go. Staff members go into the schools to teach young girls the danger signs of an abusive relationship before they get in so deep that they wind up in emergency room shelters or the morgue. They also teach boys to recognize the danger signs of abuse in themselves. Where there is domestic violence, there is usually child abuse. Many mothers who left abusive husbands after many years are heartbroken when their daughters marry the same kind of man they did. Men who abuse women often come from homes where their fathers were abusive. It's a terrible cycle that needs to be broken by education and prevention.
Violence against women in every corner of Alaska is an ugly side of our beautiful state. Until all men value women as equals and the mayhem stops, we must have a well-funded network of safe havens for the victims and their children. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Next we have Nancy Caracan.
Caracan, you got it.
One ride for the day. What a deal.
One out of three in a bed, hey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for giving me an opportunity to speak. My name is Nancy Caracan, and I'm a Health and Social Services Planner for the Commission on Aging. And I'd like to speak on behalf of the Commission in support of House Bill 66 and 67, the Governor's funding request for the Department of Health and Social Services budget. The Commission is concerned about the well-being of all vulnerable Alaskans. And we're particularly concerned, of course, about the needs of vulnerable older Alaskans. So there's several increments in the governor's budget that we really want to urge your support for. The first one is the $300,000 for the staffing for the Pioneer Homes. And then the second one is the Nursing Facilities Transition Program. That's $225,000. And the third increment that I'd like to address is the Adult Protective Services General Relief Program. Now, the governor's request for the Pioneer Home staffing would provide for the hiring of six new certified nursing assistants, and that would allow for two new staff members, staff people, in each of the three Pioneer's homes that have the highest occupancy rates. I'd like to ditto what Hava Lee said just a few moments ago and support her testimony, but also to say that the facilities with the highest occupancy rates also have the highest fall rates. They tend to have the highest fall rates. And this is really a serious safety concern that can only be remedied by increased staffing. And in addition, the trend in our Pioneers homes has been a decline in residents that need very little or lower level of care, and then an increase, a sharp increase, in the number of residents who need the higher levels of care. So the problem is not going to go away. We're all getting older. We're all sort of heading towards that line where we're going to need that kind of care. And so these vulnerable seniors and elders really need your support. And we'll all need that support in a number of years also. The second program I mentioned was the Nursing Facilities Transition Program, federally funded through September 05. And this program has been extremely successful in transitioning people from nursing homes into homes in their communities. And to date, this program has transitioned about 80 individuals out of nursing homes with a savings of about $6,500 per person. The general fund increment for the program in the governor's budget is necessary in order to continue this program. And finally, to address the Adult Protective Services General Relief Program, this provides funding that's used to pay for housing and supportive services for vulnerable adults residing in licensed assisted living homes. This is not a new program, and the funding is critical to protect vulnerable Alaska adults who are not able to live on their own. So the Commission asks that you support the passage of the Governor's proposed FY06 budget for the Department of Health and Social Services, and we thank you for consideration of our request.
Thank you. I think I've got this one down here pretty good. I've been studying it. I got Mr. Kevin Ritchie.
Exactly right, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Kevin.
My name is Kevin Ritchie with the Alaska Municipal League, and the first thing I want to do is thank you all sincerely for the action that you've already taken on the fast track supplemental and providing some assistance to smaller cities and boroughs. That's going to go a long way, we hope, this year to bringing back a number of small communities from, you know, the brink of financial ruin. And that's very much appreciated. And also, I want to say that we appreciate the thoughtful discussion that the House has had on other municipal issues this year. I have some information in front of you, which is just a compilation of as of now, the best information from the Municipal League and the state on the conditions in smaller cities around the state. And I just want to encourage you to keep working on the issue of sharing resources with small communities. The one thing that is a very good comment on small cities is, well, what are they doing to help themselves? And just one example, just one small city, which is in the A list, Ambler. Ambler has a pretty significant sales tax, very small community, 3%. It gets $7,500 per each percent of sales tax, so not a lot of commerce in a very small city. And so the ability to recover from a loss of revenue sharing, increases in fuel, increases in insurance, and so on, is very limited in the small community. So the assistance you provide is really important. And in fact, I believe also is of great benefit to the state as a whole. Just one example is, if a small community in the unorganized borough can't afford to buy its insurance, an accident or liability would likely find the state as a deep pocket for a problem. So this kind of assistance provides services and also protects the state. Anyway, I just want to thank you very much for your time, and we will certainly continue working with you. Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Ritchie. Next, we have Karen Savell.
Hello, my name is Karen Seidel. I'm from Bethel, Alaska. I was born, raised, and educated in Bethel, and I know that some of you visited that town last week. I traveled quite a ways to come and mention a couple of things about some decisions that you'll be making, which will affect my family, will affect my friends, and affect my people. One of them is the subsistence cut. We all understand data and the importance of data for making changes and for keeping things in place. Now, the way of life of my people, especially from the area I'm from, is subsistence. Subsistence is a big core of that. It's very, very important. And, you know, I was raised on smoked salmon and salmon slabs, and I have an aunt who works here, and one of the things she said, when you're coming to Juneau, make sure you bring some of that for me. So this is very, very important, and it doesn't mean much unless there's data to quantify that for other people in the state. The fact that this budget for the Department of Fish and Game subsistence will be cut dramatically, the data can't be collected, so the importance of these numbers will be diminished. And this is, I'm very sorry to say, if what I've been told is true, that the money would be utilized for a shooting range in another larger city. So it's very, very sad to see something that could be utilized for the rural area be put into a urban area and taking away from quantifying a way of life for people from where I'm from. The other thing I'd also like to mention is about the cost containment cuts for the Medicaid budget. I'm lucky enough to be, my family and my son are lucky enough to be beneficiaries of the cost containment efforts by Department of Health and Social Services with the tribal initiative. I have a disabled son and I have a typical son. And we're lucky enough to have services now to help us maintain a higher quality of life. And without those, without that assistance, and I see this with many, many other families, a lot of things crumble. Families crumble, you know, the future of those disabled people crumble, and this is essence for a higher quality of life from people all over, and especially in the rural areas, to have that support. I'm very lucky to have a close-knit extended family who help with the care of my son. But not everybody else is. And the Medicaid budget does get people from being desperate to a point where they have, at least they're able to sustain their quality of life and their health. The other thing that I wanted to mention, I know this is rather off topic and you're talking about the operating budget right now, but since I've traveled all the way from Bethel and I know that some of you have been to Bethel, I'd like to mention the capital budget. I went to school in Bethel, and I've been educated when further out for my further education in Lower 48. I have two sons right now who are in Kilbeck Elementary, and I hope some of you might have gone there when you were in Bethel last week. And I have to say that although the teachers are wonderful, the building is crumbling. My son brings water from home because there's lead in the water. And he gets so excited for Friday afternoons because that's when he has his PE class. Once a week. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Karen. Next we have Virginia Smiley. Smiley or Smiley?
Smiley.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Virginia Smiley, and I'm a breast cancer survivor. And I'm here to talk to you today about the Alaska Breast and Cervical Health Check Program. On June 18, 2002, I was diagnosed with stage 2 invasive breast cancer. Stage 2 is not an early diagnosis. And for those of you who are familiar with cancer, you know that there were many dark days ahead, including surgery, 5 months of chemotherapy, and radiation therapy. I kept spreadsheets on my medical costs, and it was well over $125,000 to treat me for my breast cancer. But a breast cancer diagnosis is not a death sentence. And with comprehensive screening examinations and early detection techniques, cancer survival is an everyday event. The goal of screening examinations, such as screening mammograms, is to find cancers before they start to cause symptoms. Screening refers to tests and examinations used to detect disease before it starts to show symptoms. And cancers that are detected because they're causing symptoms are relatively larger and are more likely to have spread, such as my case. Early detection means applying a strategy that will result in an earlier diagnosis of a cancer than otherwise might have occurred. In contrast, cancers found during screening examinations are more likely to be small and still be confined to the local site. The size of a cancer and how far it has spread are the most important factors in predicting the outlook for chances of survival for a woman who has that disease. Finding cancer as early as possible improves the likelihood that treatment will be successful. Most doctors feel that early detection tests for cancer saves many thousands of lives each year, and that many more lives could be saved if even more women and their healthcare providers took advantage of these early tests. Following the American Cancer Society's guidelines for the early detection of cancer improves the chances that cancer can be diagnosed at an early stage and treated successfully. I ask your support in supporting the Alaska Breast and Cervical Health Check Program. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Meyer. Next, we have Karen Robinson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and for the record, my name is Karen Robinson, and I'm here today representing the Alaska Women's Lobby. And the Alaska Women's Lobby has been around since 1984, and we have steering committees across the whole state. We have two issues that are extremely important to us today, and the first one, Virginia Smiley just articulated very well for us, but we're kind of wanted to put it on the record that we're kind of here for two women who actually started the Alaska Women's Lobby, both Ruth Lister and Carla Timpone. Both of them are women who fought in the early days to get the original program in place. Ruth at that time did have cancer. She has also passed away. Carla at the time did not have cancer. A year ago, she was diagnosed with stage 4 ovarian cancer, and she passed away October 5th. They believed very strongly in the fact that this program was extremely needed to help the women who didn't have insurance. Both of these women did have insurance. They know the importance and the cost of these kinds of treatment and feel very strongly. I'm also here representing 50 individuals here in Juneau, and I did bring our representative Ryrick the pink cards. I think it's now 55. I'm continuing to bring them to them each day, letting them know that the community of Juneau stands very strongly behind this funding. Secondly, we are here to also support additional funding for the domestic violence programs. And first, we want to state that we definitely really appreciate the fact that the governor saw fit this year to put the programs at the maintenance level. We also really appreciate both Representative Stoltz and also Representative Moses, who brought forward in the subcommittee an additional $200,000. All we really want is additional $300,000 to go with that $200,000 for a total of $500,000. Originally, the need was at $3 million. That hasn't changed. Most of the programs realize that they cannot expect that a large of increase this year, but really ask for you to look deep and see if you can't find a little more money to basically help all the programs across the state. As been articulated by Barbara Belknap and others, that it's an extreme problem in the state. We know that we have made major impacts in saving quite a few women and children's lives by having the shelters in place all over the state, but we need to do more. And we hope that you can maybe dig a little deeper and put a little additional money in to help the programs who have not really had a cost of living increase for a very long time. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify? Seeing none, testifiers are supposed to, or we've asked them to please try to sign up before 3 o'clock, so we're going to take a short at ease until shortly after 3, see if we have any other individuals that would like to testify, and so we'll come back at, let's call it 3:05. With that, I'll bring the meeting to at ease, and we'll be back at 3:05. Thank you.
Well, it was hard to tell because every time I'd unplug it, plug it back in, you're turning it off.
I'll go turn it on right now, and I will turn it off.
Okay.
And the doctor took the look, and it was a kneecap.
I've always just wanted to get these killing desks.
Oh, you're really?
Now I know why not.
I don't
want to
be in it.
She knows him too well.
So Jason's room by the back of him.
Is it on?
Yep. Is it on?
No.
No, it's back. It's still there.
Luke, put your hand on your hips. There you go, boys.
Completely changes
their
look,
doesn't it?
It does.
When you
oh, yeah.
Oh, scares me, Richard.
Maybe just one.
I'm
going to
go to my
team
meeting,
okay.
And I'm ready to yell.
Quite a red one.
Yeah. Are you going to
touch
it?
No, or is it over?
Yeah.
So,
go
ahead. So, of course. So, sort of those jelly beans, like in.
You can talk what was
Harry Potter. Yeah, I'll talk. What do you want me to say? No, I was just.
Man, you're not wired to sing there.
There was a lot of people here earlier.
Books.
And
I mean,
they left. We got to know everybody in the
school.
It was about
every flavor of jelly beans.
And so we're just going to wait for more test
cards. It's
going to be a little bit more.
Yeah.
Kissy face with you, Stoltz.
Testimony to see where people are coming in at, and then they're going to do the amendments. The amendments are due on Monday. We'll probably pick them up on Tuesday.
Bill, old guys like Richard and me, we get something like that, we could die.
It's old guys and babies that have amino deficiencies.
That's right.
So is it a specific amendment for, is it the Arters money? Where's it in health development?
Well, that's going to get us your letter, right? After what it is, it's a new proposal.
Oh.
She must have been here with that girl.
Is this something that would go in maybe on the capital?
Yeah,
budget?
Sorry.
Come and get there.
And is it specific to the Juneau
development? No, it's statewide.
Statewide.
I mean, we're kind of pushing that to really orchestrate it, right? It's a statewide.
But sort of networking.
Yeah, networking.
Well, her daughter is a commercial service provider. Five, like her
rest. A lot of them.
Yeah, only else you
wouldn't work.
So long she's been playing.
Like, for example, maybe something.
I thought she's got only 4,000.
You know, it's a certain
place. Where's she stationed?
Develop more.
Not looking at the paper. 135 back at five. Down here.
So, see, that's 185.
Probably no Navajo, sir.
That's
a plane I like flying.
City and Twitter. Nice pin.
Yeah.
You know, one time I was talking to an LAV pilot, this is back in 1990 or so. He was at the airport and I was leaving. I took a flight one weekend, like this Easter weekend, coming up, and I went to Skagway. They had chartered of sixes. And I asked the pilot, here's $5. They're getting these low time pilots.
Sure, one time.
And nothing, just, and they're just eager to fly to build up their time.
Yeah. And of course, as you know from being in the game, they can get guys to do it for nothing.
Yeah.
That's the problem with the businesses, right? Never pay.
That's a good thing to do. Teachers don't.
What are you doing, kid, roaming around here?
Irritating my boss.
Irritating? That's a good thing to do.
Yeah, you know, that's part of my job.
Of course, you get him spun up, and then you go into that system and grunt. We've got to figure out what the hell he's saying.
And wait, his family's coming in town. He's got three girls and a boy.
He'd be civilized then.
He's got a set of twins. How old are the twins? How old are the twins? 12 in July.
Oh, you got some young ones.
Yeah. And he's going to corral them. He thinks that they're going to stay in the fenced in yard for the rest of their life until they're 30.
Hey, you hold on to that thought as long as you can.
Good thing they look like the mom, not like their dad, they live at home till they're 40.
Now, do we have to go through
Is nobody home?
That's what I tell them.
I don't have a single buddy in my
life.
She said, no, there's no birthday this time. What would you like to do about him?
I think turn him into the Maggie the Cookie Monster.
Yeah. Well, he is the Cookie Monster.
I guess he is already.
You got another cookie like that? I think you're going to be buying clothes here pretty soon if you keep it up.
Yeah.
Huh? Matter of fact, my last four of my nine kids are summer tax funders. You're it, huh?
I just walked in for a cup of coffee.
Whiskers in the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah. You got it.
You're out of the damn crew, something like that.
Call you here. Richard said something that you might want to do with those kids. He said he had those young kids, and he sent the lower four of them to Pakistan because he read in the paper that for $16 a day you could support his kids back to about yesterday, I waited all the rest of the afternoon for you to bring in the popcorn.
Go
next
door.
And then you get out.
Yeah, right, his office. He cooks it upstairs.
I didn't know about that. Bowl. I'm going to go do that. Salt. I cooked
the whole thing.
You ate the whole?
You're not going to want to talk for more than 15 minutes,
are you? I haven't touched the microphone.
I can keep it to that. Yeah, I found that section.
We'll talk about it.
Are you ready?
Go ahead.
I'm waiting on you.
You're
okay,
out.
You go ahead.
He's
the boss.
Okay. I'm waiting on the real boss. She'll be ready in a minute.
There's truth to that.
Hmm. Who the hell? Hey. Are we ready?
That's what I missed about
that walk. We'll come back to order. Looks like the time is 3:15. So we have one more gentleman here in Juneau, Lance Miller. Apparently he would like to testify. So if you would, Lance, please come forward and give us your testimony, please.
Well, thank you. I actually did come in for just to see what was happening and get a cup of coffee, but I got coerced. But I appreciate the opportunity. I just want to speak in favor of small business support and economic development. We've been working with some of the legislators and Representative Wyrock on some initiatives for statewide entrepreneur development systems, and just sort of in support of that. I guess. And you heard from Brian Johnson earlier, but I'm, by the way, the executive director of the Juneau Economic Development Council. And we have various programs from revolving loan funds to business assistance programs that are Juneau-specific, region-wide, and statewide. And I think right now is a great opportunity in the state with some projects coming down the pike with some optimism to just not to forget those small businesses which could really spin off and grow out of the bigger projects. And I think we're all aware how, you know, it'd be nice to have more VECOs that grow out of Alaska. So that's kind of one of our real targets. And then also, if you ever are on the website, JEDC.org, an interesting program that we just started last year as an example of a statewide program is called Springboard. And it's through funding from the Department of Defense. It's technology commercialization. And we're working with many companies statewide, from laser companies to a company making a deck cleaner for aircraft carriers to human resource software. It's pretty exciting as we've gone around the state and seen some of the talent, the technical expertise, and the projects that are going on. And these are mostly small businesses on the order of 1 to 5, sometimes 8 or 10 people is it. But there's some incredible expertise out there, and they're spread out throughout the state. So I'll, you know, stay way under that 15 minutes because I think most of your buddies are aware of the importance of small business and what it really means for innovation and for a strong economy. And be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. I appreciate your testimony. With that, it appears that there are no other constituents from Juneau that are able to testify at this time. So we will bring the, I'll bring the meeting to at ease for the call of the chair, and we'll meet back here at 4:30, between 4:30 and 6, to hear from our friends in Fairbanks. I would like to say that we do appreciate listening to testimony from the citizens of Juneau and listening to their concerns on the budget issues. And I guess for the viewing audience, I would also say that tomorrow, between 9 and 10 a.m., we're going to take that public testimony from the cities of Kenai, Valdez, Ketchikan, Kodiak, and Seward from 9 to 10. From 10 to 11, from Sitka, Wrangell, Petersburg, Homer, and Dillingham. From 11 to 12, Matsu, Delta Junction, Tope, Glen Allen, and Cordova. From 12 to 1, Bethel, Kotzebue, Barrel, Nome, and Offnet Sykes. And we may take a break and come back at 2 to listen to testimony by invitation only. And with that, I thank the committee for their support and being here listening to the testimony, and we will be back at 4:30.
Is Megan work for you? Does Megan work for you? I'm Jim.
And just make sure they can hear us.
Can the LIO in Fairbanks hear us? Hello, do we have the Fairbanks LIO online? Hello? Can anybody hear us?
I can.
Good evening.
I'm going to wait a
minute. Yeah, you can go. Okay.
Do we have the Fairbanks LIO office with us? Hello?
Hello, this is Fairbanks.
Ah, there is life north of the range. Is that what Representative Kelly said?
That's
all
what
around?
I was saying.
Is your sister-in-law there?
That sounds like her.
Good.
Sounds like her to me.
Good. We'll bring the Finance Committee meeting back to order. Tonight, from it appears to be 4:45 now till 6 o'clock, we will have Fairbanks LIO office online for public testimony regarding House Bill 66, mental health budget, and also 67, operating budget. For the people in Fairbanks, I believe the LIO up there will have a 2-minute timer. We've got, it appears, about 15 or so people here on the first list that we have. We will go down through the list, excuse me, and listen to your testimony. So with that, we will start with Ruth Paropovich. Paropovich.
Paropovich.
Okay, I believe you. Please go ahead.
Okay, my name is Ruth Prokopovich. I am currently the FASP Community Services Program Coordinator for the Resource Center for Parents and Children. I'm here to testify on behalf of substance abuse funding and continued FASP funding, which I believe comes under Bill number 67, operating budget. I'd like to talk about the programs that are in place right now and the families and individuals that they serve. And they do not view these programs that have been put into place by the Office of FAS with stamps of funding. With the SAMHSA funding that's come, the $29 million that's come through the Office of FAS over the last 4.5 years. And we would really like to see that funding continue, at least at some level. Every one of the programs that's in place, especially the diagnostic teams, can be viewed as a prevention program. They help prevent secondary disabilities, which fall into the categories of mental health, and also incarceration, which costs us a lot of money. And there are some preliminary stats that show that about 70% of the population incarcerated possibly are fetal alcohol affected. That's a very huge number. I'd also like you to know that Alaska is perceived nationally and internationally as a leading state, leading program in treating and preventing FASD. And as far as substance abuse goes, I feel that we need more programs that help women who have children already deal with their substance abuse issues in a family-friendly atmosphere where they can continue parenting their children instead of losing contact with them. Substance abuse is often treated as an individual issue. Okay, thank you very much.
And thank you, Ruth, for your testimony. Next, we will go to Murray Richard.
I think you're still on. Okay. My name is Murray Richmond, and I'm from Fairbanks, and I want to thank you for supporting public broadcasting and for leaving in the budget the levels you have. And I'm here basically to give you a pat on the back today and to thank you for what you're doing. I've been involved with public broadcasting since I've been in the state of Alaska. It's been 9 years. I was doing a seminar with a church, and we were trying to get the PR, and I went by the station and asked someone if they do a story on it. And the next thing I know, I'm on the radio doing an interview and being able to talk about the seminar we were doing, and found that they were very accessible to the public. I mean, sometimes the idea is that public broadcasting is for a bunch of egg-headed yahoos who sit around and talk about opera all the time, but my experience has been really different there. It is through public broadcasting that I became a Johnny Cash fan. Watching Johnny Cash on public television, a special, I started getting very interested. I was actually doing some hosting at that time because I started feeling strong enough that I don't want to raise money for it. But I learned all about Johnny Cash and thought, you know, this is somebody I want to introduce my children to and get to know a little bit better. Through public broadcasting, I get a lot of the news. My children get to watch television that I like for them to watch as opposed to television I try to keep them away from. Through public broadcasting, at least in this area here, I'm exposed to gospel, to opera, if you like that, to rock and roll, to blues and jazz, and not to mention the educational program that comes on. Just this afternoon, being a minister, I was interested in hearing Karen Armstrong interviewed about her faith and her life as a nun and then several books that she's written. And so by supporting public broadcasting here, I think you've done a service for the state of Alaska, and I want to thank you for that.
And thank you, Mr. Richmond. And for the record, so that the people in Fairbanks do know, Representative Holmes, Representative Kelly, Representative Foster, Representative Gutenberg, Representative Jewell, Representative Ocker, Representative Stoltz, Co-Chair Meyer, and Co-Chair Chenault are here in Juneau. And with that, we will go to George Hashimoto?
That's close enough. Ladies and gentlemen of the legislature, my name is George Johnston Hashimoto, and I live at 37 Glacier Avenue here in Fairbanks. I grew up in Fairbanks and attended Lakeview Senior High School before entering the trade. I worked on the slope for over 20 years until an accident I had here in Fairbanks changed my life. I changed from an able-bodied guy who was a martial arts expert to a person who had a right leg above the knee amputation and a traumatic brain injury after a truck running a red light ran me over. One thing I didn't lose was my sense of humor and my belief in God. I have written to some of you people before about the importance of your support of independent living services in our state. I'm here today to talk to you about three key items concerning the independent living budget. Number one, for fiscal year 2006, restored a $150,000 that was reduced from the independent living budget several years ago. With the funding restored, the Department of Labor's independent living budget for 2006 would be $619,000. Number two, support a capital request in the Department of Labor's budget of $250,000 for home accessibility modifications and adaptive equipment. I personally needed a home accessibility modifications to return to my home after my accident. I'd like to see these services made available to others who do not qualify for other funding sources. Last, number three, support a funding request of $225,000 in the Department of Health and Social Services budget to continue the nursing home transition program. Thank you for the opportunity to address you today. If you have any questions, I'll do my best to answer. Thank you.
And thank you, sir, for your testimony. Next, we will have Andy Harrington.
Thank you. This is Andy Harrington. I appreciate the opportunity to... What? That was upset. appreciate the opportunity to address the committee. I'll try to make my points very brief. I also wanted to say thank you for restoring the funding for public broadcasting. That's an important part of my family's life up here, and we very much appreciate it. I would like to encourage you to take advantage of this opportunity to take the Human Services Matching Grant, which at this point serves Anchorage, Fairbanks, and MADSU, and restore that to the level that it was at 4 or 5 years ago. I think that would mean moving the state appropriation up to approximately $2.2 million. That money is very effectively used in all the community programs. It is available to faith-based organizations as well as other 501c3s. It's locally controlled. It's met by large amounts of matching money that the organizations bring from other sources. It's a very good investment, and I would strongly encourage you to look at that and try to move that up to that $2.2 million level. There are four other things on which I would urge you to accede to the governor's funding level. One is for breast and cervical cancer screening and treatment, $1.8 million. I strongly feel that that is money that's well spent. $1.1 million for fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, and $1.5 million for substance abuse and prevention. Like the Human Services Matching Grant, these are preventive medicine. This is an ounce of prevention being worth a pound of cure. Spending $1 million on prevention of fetal alcohol syndrome, one child who suffers from that disability costs about that much during the child's lifetime. So I understand the committee is concerned that you might not be able to maintain these funding levels in future years, but even being able to prevent a handful of cases over the next 2 years would make a big difference. Thank you very much for your time.
Excuse me, and thank you, Mr. Harrington. Next, we have Tabor Raybon.
Yes, thank you very much, Tabor Raybon, and today I'm representing Arctic Alliance for People, which is a coalition of human service providers in the interior. And I would like to echo Mr. Harrington's statement about our hope that you will take this opportunity. And the opportunity is the fact that we do have a little breathing room in the budget. And I understand the fiscal restraint with which you are looking at the budget. But I also think this is an opportunity to make investments in the state that will pay off in the future. And things like restoring the Human Service Community Matching Grant to prior levels, and we're not talking about new programs here, we're talking just about restoration. An appropriation of $2.2 million would bring us back to the levels of about 4 years ago. We are only able to fund half the agencies now with the current levels that we did at those times. And we are talking about programs that are prevention programs, programs that are saving the state actual hard dollars, not just projected in the future, but right here and now. I'd also like to put my two cents in to encourage you to accept the governor's increments for fetal alcohol spectrum disorder
prevention funding and also the substance abuse prevention funding that the governor proposed at $1.5 million in the operating budget. These programs are prevention, and again, I really urge you to consider money as making an investment in the future of the state, because the money will be saved down the road. Anytime we can prevent fetal alcohol syndrome, anytime we can prevent substance abuse, we are really making a savings for the state that will be realized. And I think that's what we're supposed to do with a windfall, in my opinion. And I really urge you to think in those terms. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
And thank you. Next, we have Kimberly Vanderhoof.
Hello, my name is Kimberly Vanderhoof, and first of all, I would like to thank you for the tough job that you do. You have some very important decisions to make, and I'm glad I'm not in your shoes. I would also like to thank you for continuing to support suicide prevention in Alaska. Tragically, Alaska historically remains one of the highest states in the nation for suicide. And in 2004, we had the highest rate that we've had in 10 years of people who have chosen to end their lives. Our Alaskan families continue to struggle with substance abuse, depression, family violence, medical and mental illnesses, and suicide continues to be an option that is a result of hopelessness. We need to continue looking at diverse suicide prevention efforts statewide in rural areas as well as our larger communities. Caroline Crisis Intervention is Alaska's only statewide suicide prevention hotline that is open 24 hours a day and available to all Alaskans. We would certainly appreciate an appropriation of funds to continue doing the work that we do. This year, our call volume resulted in roughly 65% of our callers being at risk of suicide. And anytime we run any public service announcements, any local community education efforts, our call volume increases by 50%. I think that's a strong statement to what is going on in our state and what our families are struggling with. And again, I just want to thank you for the tough job that you do.
And thank you for your testimony tonight. Next, we will move on to Webb Phillips.
Members of the legislature, my name is Webb Phillips, and I live at 110th Avenue, Fairbanks. Nearly 15 years ago, I experienced a severe head injury while on vacation in New Zealand. It changed the meaning of things in my life, but I'm not here today to tell you about that. I'm here before you today to seek your support of Independent Living Services. I have written to some of you before about the importance of your support of independent living services in our state. Today, I will talk to you about three important items about the independent living budget. Number one, for financing year 2006, restore the $150,000 that was reduced several years ago from the independent living line item in the Department of Labor's budget to $619,000. Two, support a capital request in the Department of Labor's budget of $225,000 for home accessibility modification and adaptive equipment. I would like to see this service made available to others who do not qualify for other funding sources. Three, support a funding request of $225,000 in the Department of Health and Social Services budget to continue the nursing home transition program. Thank you for the opportunity to address you today, and please, if you have any questions, please do ask them.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Next, we'll go to David Jacobson.
Good afternoon. My name is David Jacobson, and I reside at 4214 Matheson Court. I'm here today in a dual capacity. 25 years ago, I was a user of independent living services. I was unemployed. And through the rehabilitation I received and the encouragement, I was able to return to the workforce. Now, I'm also here today to talk about independent living services because now I work for an independent living program and have had over 20 years to see the changes it's made in the lives of persons with disabilities throughout the state. I, too, am going to thank you, first of all, for the support that so many of you have given to independent living in the past and ask that you provide your support now for the three items. One, to restore the independent living budget by adding that $150,000 that was removed several years ago for a total budget now of $619,000 in the Department of Labor's budget. Number two, there's a home accessibility modification grant and the capital funding of $250,000 request in the Department of Labor's budget as well. Sirs and madam, that is money well spent to help individuals either remain living in their homes or to get back into their homes that they've been living in assisted living homes. Please support that. Thirdly, the nursing home transition grant for $225,000. It's been money well invested in the past. Over 75 individuals have made transitions from nursing homes back into the community. The money that's been saved by after those transitions have been made are several million dollars that the state now does not have to spend in their match to Medicaid to maintain those individuals in nursing homes. Please, for 2006 fiscal year, continue to fund the nursing home transition. It's excellent money well spent. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobson. Next, we'll move to Brenda Stanfield.
Hi, my name is Brenda Stanfield, and I'm the director of the Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living. We're a domestic violence and sexual assault shelter here in Fairbanks. First off, I want to thank you for putting the $200,000 that you've increased the CDBSA's budget through the Department of Public Safety for grants for programs. We really appreciate that. Any increase helps. But I also want to call your attention to that we're still struggling statewide to keep providing services at the level that we have been providing them. We've been at flat funding for many years. However, our services have went up by as much as 30% in terms of shelter nights that we've provided in the last 4 years. Each year, we have increases in costs. This year, heating fuel has just about wiped us out. In prior years, it's been health insurance, those kind of things, where all of a sudden we're looking at, okay, we have to look at providing services. We've got to cut somewhere. Where do we cut? Do we look at cutting out the prevention programs that in the long run is going to make family violence a thing of the past? Do we cut down on safety, which is not something that we can cut down on? What do we do here when we have limited funding to provide for the needs of the community? It continues to be an increasing problem. We've made strides in the last 9 years that I've been working in this field. I've seen that we've made positive changes. We've had changes in arrest policies. We have prosecution. We have laws, which are great. But bottom line is we've got to provide the services that will allow women and children an opportunity to continue going forward, to continue growing, to get back their self-esteem, to look at ways to get back in the job force, to become economically dependent. These are crucial pieces and parts that cannot be done without. I worry that I see our system starting to slide backwards with the continuation of flat funding, with decreases in public safety, with decreases in the ability to prosecute. This is not a place that we can slack up any. We've got to continue putting our resources here to make our families in Fairbanks and all around Alaska whole. I just encourage you to do an increase in this area.
And thank you, Brenda. Next, we will move on to Cami Aries.
She chose not to testify.
Okay. Then we will move to the one that I was going to probably have the hardest time with tonight. Is it
Adara?
Adara Ben Israel.
Adara?
Yeah.
Please.
Adara.
Adara.
Yeah. Hi, my name's Adara Ben Israel, and I live in the Carmen House, which is like a subsidiary of the Interior Center for Nonviolent Living. And I would just like to say that the money that has been provided to that program has been very well spent. The people are amazing. They put in time well above and beyond the budget that's allotted to them. The amount of people that come in that are in our town that struggle with domestic violence, trying to change their lives, is amazing, and it's unfortunate.
And this center has provided a roof for children whose futures are being shaped while they are going through these terrible experiences. And I would just like to say that you can never err when you invest money into children. And that's what is going on at this interior center, is there's a lot of children and a lot of moms. And it's a situation that is sometimes bittersweet, and I would just like you to really remember that there are a lot of children in that center. And I'm very grateful for it. It's like a little bit of heaven in the middle of Fairbanks. So thank you.
And thank you, Adara. Next, we'll move to Deborah Allman Reynolds.
My name is Deborah Allman Reynolds. I also work for the Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living. I'm the therapist for the shelter, and I also coordinate our transitional living program. I'm also very grateful that the funding has been there for us to be able to provide these services. My concern is, at the current level, our ability to provide adequate services is somewhat limited. I am hopeful that you'll be able to take a look at what our needs are versus what your funding is, and allow us to provide a more wide scope of services so that the women who spend time in our transitional living program will have the opportunity to heal in all areas of their lives. Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Reynolds, for your testimony. Next, we will move to Sandy Young.
He chose not to testify.
All right. How about Pam? Kara Lunas?
Ooh, good job. Kara Lunas, that was very good. I'm Pam Kara Lunas. I am the manager of Resource Center for Parents and Children's program called Stevie's Place, which is a child advocacy center. And first of all, I do want to thank you again, echo what other people have said. I know what you do is very difficult, and you have a whole lot of people to please, and you can't please everyone. However, I think restoring the $1.1 million that's in the governor's budget to continue the fetal alcohol spectrum or syndrome funding is just really vital. That is a service that is so necessary in this state. We have one of the highest rates of alcohol consumption in the nation, and that unfortunately boils down to a lot of children who are born with FASD. What we know is that early diagnosis is vital. We know that it costs us millions of dollars throughout the lifetime of a person who has a particular diagnosis if there's not early intervention. And the services that are being provided throughout the state are just amazing. The diagnostic team in Fairbanks, for example, is all volunteers. They're all professionals because they have to be to make up the team. And because they are volunteers and they all have busy practices, there's a very long waiting list of people that need the services that they can't even get until there's a diagnosis. Our agency is co-sponsoring a training on Monday by an internationally recognized expert in this field, and I think it's very significant to note that there are 200 people registered to attend that training. These are professionals who work with families who have been impacted by substance abuse consumption prenatally. That's pretty significant, and I think that's an indicator of the level of the significance of the issue in this community. And thank you very much.
And thank you for your testimony. Next, we will move to Shaylee Hutchinson.
I'll fit up. My name is Shaylee Hutchinson, and I'm a family navigator at RCPC Stevie's Place. You just heard from the manager of Stevie's Place. And I'm here to testify also for the grant for continued services for fetal alcohol spectrum disorders. And I wanted to give the perspective of someone who provides direct services to families and children, parents and children who are impacted by FASD, and to give you some idea of what happens with somebody that goes to programs like that. For instance, I can think of a single father who lives in a rural area who is raising two young children who are impacted by fetal alcohol syndrome, and he needs the ability to be able to call me a couple times times a week to talk about what happens with his kids, how to handle his kids, how to set up good parenting programs for his kids at home. I can think of a mother and a child who are both impacted by fetal alcohol spectrum disorders living in a rural area who needs some ongoing support to keep her child safe and also keep her functioning so that both she and her child can be successful. I can think of a teenager who was impacted by fetal alcohol spectrum disorders who also was sexually assaulted, and she needs she and her foster parent need a lot of information, referrals, support. I can think of a mother that I recently worked with who was pregnant and was struggling with a substance abuse issue, and I was able to get her into a program where she could have the support and the services and the treatment that she needs. These are real individuals and real families that are impacted by this money. It is money well spent. And I'd really encourage you to continue on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hutchinson. Next, Annie Opper.
Good late afternoon. We thank you for hearing our comments today. We also thank you for all the hard work that you guys are doing to put into this budget. I also want to thank you, not to butter you up too much, but thank you for restoring the public broadcasting money. It's very important to all of us here. And I really hope that you can hear our voices today, and I urge you to support our requests. I know that you know that we're conservative and we're pragmatic people, that we make ends meet with very little, which helps a lot of people. Why do we do what we do? Well, my values dictate my life's work. You do something you love, you do it with passion, you try to make a difference and contribute to the good of all. Resources are diminishing, we all know that. Certain services are vital, though, and we have some breathing room here, not a windfall. Medical care, it's a tangible service. Breast cancer. I urge you to support the $1.8 million that we need to continue screening the lives of our women in Alaska. Early detection and prevention is the key to survival of women, especially diagnosed with breast cancer. It's the leading cause of death for Native women in Alaska. We simply cannot afford to go backwards with programs, especially healthcare programs that make such a tangible difference. 168 lives in this program alone were saved, and how much is a life worth? At the Breast Cancer Detection Center of Alaska here in Fairbanks, we're working closely with the statewide BNC programs, ensuring mammographies are available to all women regardless of race or socioeconomic class. The community matching block grant money, please increase that to $2.2 million. It would restore the cuts the legislature had made over the grants over the last 4 years and still accommodate the inclusion of Mapsu Valley. There's been a 43% decrease in funds since 2001. And fetal alcohol syndrome. Well, these are prevention programs. Our state is really actually known nationwide as one of the state-of-the-art programs addressing fetal alcohol syndrome. We have just touched the surface. These programs are a vital component to our healthcare service delivery program. It's sort of like child abuse. We never used to talk about it until we started talking about it. And we decided, wow, it's happening to a lot of children, as is fetal alcohol syndrome. I believe in earlier years it was due to ignorance on the issue. These are hardcore issues with no easy solution. So maybe Churchill was wrong when he said, if you're not a liberal by the time you're 20, you have no heart. If you're not a conservative by the time you're 40, you have no head. Have a heart, use your head. These numbers don't lie. Please remember our words. We're counting on it.
Thank you, Ms. Hopper. Next, we have Mike Powers.
Good afternoon. I'm speaking two capacities, one representing Fairbanks Memorial Hospital in support to the Breast and Cervical Cancer Fund, also as a public radio listener. Representative Kelly and Representative Holmes were instrumental in bringing a cancer treatment center to the Fairbanks community, and I remember during construction committee meetings and finance meetings, ironically saying, it's our hope no one has to use this. The sustaining the additional funds for the cancer treat or the breast and cervical cancer program, $500,000, would be certainly a step to eliminating the need for such a service. Very important for early detection, and would encourage you to continue that support. As a public radio listener for 25 years, just this past 2 weeks, I counted 12 stories dealing with many of the issues you're struggling with now, related to Mississippi's problems in funding Medicaid and looking at new voluntary cost controls and cash incentives as a way to balance your budget. Mike Leavitt with Health and Human Services is working on struggling with the issue of caps on medical malpractice, which Senator Stevens took up just yesterday in his committee. There was a wonderful program where governors from Texas, Florida, and Kansas all spoke to different ways to handle the Medicaid programs with the crisis they're facing. In what I'm driving at is that I think Murray Richmond spoke eloquently about the quality of life issues that public broadcasting addresses, brings to life. I would like to speak from a healthcare standpoint that this is information that is timely, credible, and very valuable, and would urge that continued support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Powers. Next, we will move to Cheryl Keepers.
Thank you. My name is Cheryl Keepers. I'm here today on behalf of the Fairbanks Borough's Health and Social Services Commission, which is a volunteer-appointed commission that allocates the Human Services Community Matching Grant. First, thank you for keeping the matching grant funding at the level requested by the governor, which keeps us at the same service level as the current year. However, as you have heard, state funding for this grant has decreased by 43% since fiscal 01, a direct loss to our community of approximately $400,000 in state funds. In that same time frame, our community was not able to take advantage of the potential to generate more than $4 million in other funds related to these projects, project income, kind donations, and other funds attached to them, because we were not able to fund all of the proposals that the commission received. In the coming year, the Health and Social Services Commission is now trying to read and score the 14 proposals that they've received for funding for FY06. The total amount requested is nearly $800,000. The projected average return on state dollars, the total project value in these happens to be $13. For every state dollar invested, the projects, if we were able to fund them all, would generate $13 through local match, other funds, project income, and in-kind donations, which I think is a pretty good return on investment. However, if the Human Services Community Matching Grant is flat funded, less than half of the proposals will receive funds. You've heard a few other people ask that you restore funding to the $2.2 million level. If that were to take place, the Commission could fund about three-fourths of the proposals. That, in turn, would generate $4.7 million in other funds and in-kind that the agencies can create and tap into while they provide essential human services. And the figures I gave you were for Fairbanks alone. I'm sure if Anchorage and Mat-Su were included, they'd be quite a bit higher. Thank you for your consideration.
And thank you, Ms. Keepers. Next, we have Sandra Bond.
Thank you very much. My name is Sandra Bond. I'm the legal advocate at the Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living. My job is one that I love, and I thank you very much for giving us the funding so that I can have this job. Although, just between you, me, and everybody watching this, I would probably do it for free, but don't take that as a hint. I appreciate the work that you've done in funding our agency, as well as the other shelters across the state, and I ask that you consider, if at all possible, finding some money in there so I can get some additional help. I'm only one person, and I see an increasing number of people every day. There are many who are remaining unserved because there's only one of me, and as perfect as I am, I cannot serve everyone. So I would certainly appreciate it if y'all could find a way to find me some help. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mrs. Bond. Next, we go to Annette Freiberger.
Freiberger, that's correct. Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Annette Freiberger. I currently work at the University of Alaska at Interior Lutheran's campus, but I spent 7 years working at FNA, and I'm still committed to the issues that I fought for as executive director of that organization. I would hate to see this state slide backwards when it comes to addressing the number one health issue in Alaska, substance abuse. Substance abuse prevention programs and FAS prevention programs are proactive, pre-crisis ways to avoid more expensive, more difficult problems later. Just like preventative medicine and preventative dental health saves money and pain, these important programs will continue to save money and, more importantly, save lives, improve the quality of family lives, and save children the needless burden of living with a 100% preventable birth defect. Even though it is sometimes hard to know how many children have been saved, the embarrassment
of knowing they suffer lifelong deficiencies, I know that FAS prevention has saved many. As people learn to live more healthy lifestyles, the savings will be in both money paid out and, more importantly, in human savings. I congratulate the governor for recognizing the need to support these important programs. Please include these worthwhile programs in your House budget. And I also want to quote Benjamin Franklin's wise words, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Also, as a survivor of breast cancer, I can personally attest to the importance of early detection. I have put personal energy into this cause by serving on the board of the Breast Cancer Detection Center of Alaska and urge women to get exams on TV commercials. All women need to have access to breast and cervical cancer exams, regardless of their ability to pay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Freiberger. Next, Karen McLean.
Good evening, committee members. I'm here to ask you to please include the $1.8 million funding enhancement in the budget for the breast and cervical health check program. A few years ago, I was one of the women who received screening through this program, and I'm not the type of person that you would normally expect to ever need these services. After an 18-year career as a chemical engineer, I was surprised by a job layoff, could not find employment for nearly 2 years, and ended up with no medical insurance. Then I found irregularities in a breast that appeared to be a rapid-growing type of breast cancer. I was terrified because I could have been dead within a year if I did not have treatment for the cancer. I could not afford the screening, certainly could not have afforded the treatment. Then I was informed about the breast and cervical cancer health check program, that they would pay not only for the breast exam and mammogram, but also for the treatment if I was diagnosed with breast cancer through the program. This program made a big difference in my life at that time. And of course, this could happen to any woman at any time in Alaska. $1.3 million of the additional funding will enable the Breast and Cervical Health Check Program to provide early screening for breast and cervical cancer for 3,000 more women over 2 years, increasing the total number of women served to 9,200 per year. The program funds a vital statewide screening service for Alaska women who would otherwise not be able to afford clinical breast exams, pelvic exams, and pap tests. To qualify, these Alaskans must be women who are in the age group of 18 to 64, who meet certain income guidelines, who do not have medical insurance, cannot meet their deductible, or whose insurance does not pay for these health check services. Early screening is the key to saving lives of women in Alaska. And I ask you that you please approve including this funding in your budget. Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. McLean. Next, we'll go to Luke Hopkins.
Thank you very much. I'm Luke Hopkins. I'm here representing the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly as a member of that elected body. First, I'd like to thank you for maintaining the matching block grant at the governor's level. These community matching block grants are very important to our community. But what I would like to do is ask you to increase or consider increasing the matching block grant funding. It was the number 9th priority in our legislative request, and the minor investment of an additional $250,000 to bring it up to a $600,000 level that we've seen in past years would greatly benefit our social service agencies that have to deal with concerns of homelessness, at-risk youth, hospice situations, and senior transportation. So I ask you to seriously consider that. It's a very small amount for the Fairbanks community to ask for this increase. I would also like to speak to the revenue sharing needs that the borough has. Obviously, you're well aware of the lack of revenue sharing at this time. I realize that there's a $900,000 amount in the governor's budget to assist the Fairbanks borough with this year's payment for the PERS and TERS liability. So I ask you to consider revenue sharing the reinstatement. I would like to thank you for restoring the funding to public broadcasting and hope you maintain that funding. That will allow a continuation of our broadcasts over the radio so you and everybody else can hear what we do. Thank you very much.
Yes, and Mr. Hopkins, before you leave, I think Representative Guttenberg had a question. Or
Thank you.
I just have to take this opportunity to say hello to my brother-in-law and tell him that I'll see him tonight when I get home.
Okay, I'll make sure that I stay up. Thank you.
Oh, the joy. With that, we will move on to Ruth Makar.
Yes, this is Ruth Makar, and I appreciate you allowing me to speak this afternoon. I just got back yesterday from Washington, D.C., asking for continued funding for cancer research, and y'all know that in order for that cancer research to be effective, first we have to have early detection. And so I'm asking for support for the governor's request for $1.8 million funding for the breast and cervical cancer early detection program. The key to fighting cancer is early detection. And a dear friend of mine just lost her life to breast cancer this last fall when she was found a lump young and just felt like that she couldn't afford to have the treatment or get a mammogram and eventually succumb to breast cancer. And it's just programs like the breast and cervical cancer program that can help the women that are underinsured or no insurance. And so I just want to thank you for the work that you're doing and ask for this funding. Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Carr. Next, we will move on to Philip Evans.
Good afternoon. I'm Phil Evans, and about an hour ago I learned that $500,000 is being considered for allocation to the hunter education range, the fish and game hunter education range. And many of the interior delegates are aware of the problem we had just a year ago, and because of lack of funds, we were concerned that the range would close. So this is very encouraging, and I hope that this specific funding for the hunter education range will be approved and go through. This would allow for selection of a full-time manager, a qualified assistant. We still have a manager appointed on a temporary basis, even though we've gone through a lengthy bid process. For some reason, Fish and Game was unable to make the selection. By having a full-time manager and qualified assistant, we could implement additional programs and expand public shooting hours, particularly on the weekend. Currently, between 4 and 6, range is closed, and this is because of the duty limitations of only having one qualified person at the range to supervise. This is a peak period of public shooting, and by being able to have the range open from 4 to 6, it would increase the range utilization significantly. I feel this is a very important decision. The temporary manager now should be considered for full-time employment. He's extremely gifted, talented, motivated, and he's a wonderful advocate for all the purposes this range serves. Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Evans. Are there any other people that would like to testify at the Fairbanks LIO?
We don't have any other testifiers right now.
Okay, we have We have asked that all testifiers sign up before 30 minutes prior to the end of the teleconference. So with that, if there are no other people that are in Fairbanks that want to testify, we will bring this section of the public testimony to an end. I would like to thank the ladies and the staff at the LIO in Fairbanks for all the work that they've done tonight to allow us to hear testimony from the people up north. And I will also mention that tomorrow we will continue public testimony on House Bill 66 and House Bill 67. We'll have public testimony from 9 to 10 o'clock from the following communities of Kenai, Valdez, Ketchikan, Kodiak, and Seward. From 10 to 11, we will have testimony from Sitka, Wrangell, Petersburg, Homer, and Dillingham. 11 to 12, the Mat-Su, Delta Junction, Tope, Glen Allen, and Cordova. From 12 to 1, Bethel, Kotzebue, Barrow, Nome, and the off-net sites. And after 2 o'clock, we will take testimony by invitation only. So with that, I would like to, Representative Jewell.
Just a quick question. How long do you expect the invited testimony to run?
I don't have any idea right now at this time. Probably not very long.
Okay.
At this point, we have none. It's a catch-all for anybody that we can't get to during our time, and so far we're staying on schedule. So there's a good chance we won't.
Ms. Chairman.
Representative Kelly.
The gap between the end of the scheduled testimony and the 2 o'clock, is that going to be lunch tomorrow, or?
There will be a break, so.
Okay.
If you're buying, we will go have lunch.
Well.
And with that, I'll bring the meeting to a close, and thank you for attending.